Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welch, and in these podcasts, we explore different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Today, we are going to take a look at the first 2 months of the Civil War in County Kilkenny, mainly July and early August 1922. Now, it really must have been a tumultuous time for all concerned, civilians and combatants alike. Things were happening on a daily, if not hourly, basis. So, for example, large columns of Free State and Anti-Treaty IRA were moving around the county at different times, which led to relatively large set-piece battles when they did meet. But first, if we can take a step back and look at the national context. During the first 2 weeks of the Civil War, that's starting on the 28th of June 1922, of course, the main fighting focused on Dublin. Once the Free State forces had dislodged the anti-treaty from their main strongholds in Dublin city centre, all eyes now turned to the Munster Republic, so-called. This was roughly south of the train line that stretched from Limerick down to Waterford, passing through South Kilkenny on its way. So by mid-July, national attention would actually focus totally on Kilkenny and Limerick to an extent on the other side. The assault on the eastern side of the Munster Republic was to begin from Kilkenny. The aim was to start with an attack on Waterford City, which was held by anti-treaty forces, and then push across into South Tipperary. The Free State's HQ for the South East was actually in Kilkenny, and the commandant there, John Thomas Prowse, was tasked with leading the assault on Waterford. Now, Prowse, of course, we've talked about him before, had successfully dislodged the anti-treaty forces from Kilkenny just 2 months before in the Battle of Kilkenny in May 1922, so he was considered the best man for the job. As mentioned in other podcasts, he was a Tipperary native and had been an officer in the American Army during World War I. But first things first, Proust had to make sure things were under control in his own backyard in County Kilkenny before he pushed down into Waterford. Once the Civil War had commenced proper in Dublin, it gave license for the Free State forces to launch offences all around the country. In Kilkenny, this mostly involved the dislodging of the anti-treaty IRA from the buildings they had held around the county. Their presence in these barracks, usually they were barracks, was tolerated for the previous months because no one kind of wanted to fire the first shot. But once the war broke out proper, they needed to be removed from the point of view of the Free State. So on Saturday the 1st of July, just 2 days into the Civil War, Free State forces travelled to Callan with the aim of dislodging the anti-treaty IRA in the town. Anti-treaty men had largely been in control of the district since the standoff in May. The Free State soldiers began taking advantageous positions around the town. They then proceeded to open fire on Callan Barracks, which was then occupied by local members of the anti-treaty IRA. Those inside the barracks responded in kind, but after about an hour evacuated and escaped into the countryside, their superior local knowledge proving vital there. They had set the building alight before they left, which was part of the course to stop your enemy taking it over when you left, with the result that the barracks was completely gutted, making it completely uninhabitable for the Free State Army. The Free State Army had no safe base in the town and then just had to return to Kilkenny later that evening. This resulted in the anti-treaty IRA returning to Callan just a few days later and reasserting their control over the town, which would last for the rest of July. Less complicated for the Free State Army was the seizure of Thomastown and Mundavat barracks, where they met little resistance from the small number of anti-treaty IRA inside there. These buildings were not destroyed, hence the Free State forces could garrison them. By the way, the first tragedy of the Civil War within County Kilkenny was not actually as a result of a clash between the opposing forces. On the morning of the 20th of June, just as the Civil War hostilities were breaking out in the capital, 23-year-old Free State soldier John Moran met a very unfortunate end. Moran, who was a native of Moline Rue, was killed in a tragic accident in his bed in Kilkenny Military Barracks. His comrade, Sergeant Christopher O'Brien, who slept in the bed opposite, was in the process of unloading his revolver, having returned from an early morning excursion into town. He had just called all his roommates to rouse them from their sleep. As he unloaded his gun, though, his finger slipped off the lever and a shot rang out as he buzzes, just as Moran was just getting up out of his bed. O'Brien later explained, Moran was shot through the head. He fell back and moaned a little. He died almost immediately. We were the best of friends. The coroner recorded the cause of death as shock and laceration of the brain as a result of the gunshot wound. Moran's coffin, draped in the tricolour, was transferred to Castlecomer for his funeral. He was the eldest of a large family and had previously worked as a coal miner, like many a young man up that neck of the woods. Now, just a few days after the anti-treaty forces had been moved from Callan, Thomastown and Mullevass, the anti-treaty struck back. In the early hours of Wednesday, the 5th of July, so it's all the same week here, there was a major confrontation between the pro and anti-treaty forces in the village of Urlingford. This time it was the anti-treaty IRA who attacked the Free State forces who were garrisoned inside Urlingford barracks. They had been there since May after the Battle of Kilkenny. A large group of approximately 300 anti-treaty IRA, mostly natives of Tipperary, Cork and Kilkenny, converged on Urlingford in the early morning, having crossed over the Tipperary border nearby from the direction of Templetuohy. They were under the command of 33-year-old Dinny Lacey, who was OC of the 3rd Tipperary IRA Brigade. He would actually soon become leader of the entire 2nd Southern Anti-Treaty IRA Division, which took in basically Tip, Kilkenny and Limerick. So a very formidable leader. They began attacking the barracks at 3:45 a.m. with rifle and machine gun fire, with the Free State troops inside responding in kind. There must have been a tremendous volume of noise, and the sounds of the fighting that day remained in local memory for many decades after. Some of the anti-treaty men managed to get close enough to throw grenades inside the building. After a battle that lasted over 3 hours, the 17 Free State soldiers within the barracks, under the command of James Houlihan and Ned Holland, surrendered. The anti-treaty men captured 18 rifles and some revolvers. 3 Free State soldiers were wounded in the attack, Captain Holland, Private Roach and Michael Lockman, who received a foot wound. In a very unfortunate coincidence, Lockman's sister, Margaret, had also been shot in the foot in the crossfire during the Battle of Kilkenny, you might remember, just 2 months previously. All the captured Free State soldiers were placed into lorries and driven away. The barracks was set alight. However, the fire never took hold, and after the anti-treaty forces had departed, some locals extinguished it. The anti-treaty IRA men were stood down near Longford Pass, which is a townland in County Tipperary, about 5 kilometres from Urlingford. Some of the anti-treaty IRA party then retired to the local public house, known as Mary Willie's, people will still know it today, to have a drink to calm themselves after a long battle. The lorries containing the Free State prisoners were sent in the direction of Templetuohy. They had only moved a few hundred metres when fire was opened on them from a group of Free State soldiers who had been on their way from Thurles to help the Urlingford barracks garrison. They obviously got wind of the attack that was happening there that morning. The anti-treaty IRA men were in a very bad position strategically, as the area, which was mostly boggy, was flat with very little cover. The Free State forces, under the leadership of Commandant Small, had a much better cover from behind large stacks of turf. The anti-treaty at the public house nearby could obviously hear this going on and started firing on the Free State troops from behind an iron shed near the pub. Lacey, who was in the convoy of lorries, ordered a machine gun post to be set up, which opened fire on the Free State soldiers. In the confusion, the 17 Free State soldiers captured in Urlingford ran from the lorries and made good their escape. Under the intense fire, the anti-treaty IRA men had to crank the lorries, which is like that hitch or that lever you see in front of the cars in the old films, to get them started and reverse towards the crossroads to evade the danger zone. Lacey then gave orders to retreat from the area, and while this retreat was happening, Paddy English from Rahill, County Tipperary, was unfortunately shot and fatally wounded. He was on the anti-treaty side. One of Lacey's sub-officers, Bill Quirk, later gave this account of the altercation. Quote, "Were it not for the fact that Lacey was with the column on this occasion, I could not possibly have escaped without losing several men. Many of our men were inexperienced. Several of our drivers were civilians and consequently made the best tracks possible to get off the bullet-swept road. As a result, we had only a limited number of men able and willing to shift the lorries. I was particularly lucky on this occasion. I picked up an old tin hat which lay on the road, and putting it on my head, I found that it fitted quite nicely. I was walking along the road with Lacey when it was hit for the first time, and in the course of the subsequent fight, which must have lasted for over 1 hour, I got 3 further dings in my old tin hat. End quote. So he was very lucky to pick up that hat, to say the very least. Bill Quirk, he lived a long life afterwards. And what you can also make out from that account was how important the lorries were to the anti-treaty side. They didn't want to lose them because it meant they wouldn't be able to travel up and down the country or where they wanted to go without the lorries. Now, it's, I suppose, hard to imagine, but in the midst of all this turmoil in the early weeks of July 1922, Commandant Prowse, leader of the Free State Troops in the southeast, found time to get married. On Wednesday, the 12th of July, at 8 o'clock in the morning, Prowse married Mary Conba of Kilmallock, County Limerick, in a ceremony in St. John's Church, O'Loughlin Memorial Church, in Kilkenny City. He was then 42 years old, and Mary, his bride, was 25. The marriage, which was his second, his first wife having passed away, had been arranged prior to the outbreak of the fighting, and the event was kept top secret. On her way to County Kilkenny through Limerick and Tipperary, the bride was stopped on a number of occasions by anti-treaty IRA men who controlled the area, of course, who wanted to know the reason for her trip to Kilkenny. She, of course, did not disclose this in case she was kept hostage or anything of the sort. There was a large gathering in attendance at the ceremony, it was said, and as the bride and bridegroom left the church, they passed under an arch of crossed rifles, like the way people do hurleys at weddings, I suppose, nowadays. And there's a photograph of that, a famous photograph of that, of Prowse and Mary's wedding just outside the steps of St. John's Church. Now, to keep Kilkenny citizens informed of the rapidly changing news stories, the Kilkenny People newspaper began printing a midweek special war edition. Although the local newspapers were unambiguously supportive of the pro-treaty side, of their own volition, it must be said, it is important to note that censorship was in operation throughout the country. No reports in favour of the anti-treaty side were permitted. I suppose the relative blitzkrieg by the Free State Army in affirming its control of Kilkenny meant that by mid-July, after only 2 weeks of fighting, it was only the Callan district and the areas in the south of the county that bordered the River Shore which were considered to remain under total Republican or anti-treaty control. The Free State Army now focused much of their attention on the south and southwest of the county. In the early hours of 17th of July 1922, a party of Free State soldiers under the command of Brigade Adjutant James O'Hanrahan of Kilkenny Barracks surprised a group of anti-treaty IRA men who were camped out near Winegap. They had been based there for a number of days with the intention of stopping any Free State troops from travelling towards the anti-treaty strongholds of Carrick-on-Shore and Clamel. Machine guns attacked their position and the anti-treaty IRA, which numbered only about 13 men there, quickly surrendered. The Free State forces captured a number of rifles, shotguns and pistols, while in addition they discovered 2 landmines which had been set on the road. One of the men captured, Eamon McCluskey, had been wanted for some time. Now, Eamon McCluskey had been a very pivotal IRA man in that area during the end of the War of Independence and became very prominent in the Civil War. He was a teacher, actually, in Winegap. I believe he actually ended up in later life in Galway. But anyhow, back in 1922, he made an audacious escape from Kilkenny prison just 2 weeks, actually, after he'd been captured in Winegap. He disguised himself as a woman using clothes that were smuggled into the prison by Hannah Murphy, the OC of Cumannamon in Kilkenny. He then simply walked out of the jail with a group of females who had been visiting. I'm sure some of the Free State wardens got reprimanded for that one. So by mid-July 22, it became apparent that Waterford City was going to be the next battlefront, as it was under the control of anti-treaty forces, as we mentioned. The Free State needed to retake the city if they wanted to push west into Munster. The anti-treaty side were also reinforcing the town, ready for the battle ahead. On the 16th of July, a group of anti-treaty IRA, mainly from Tipperary, swept into Greignamana from the Carlow direction. They had been on their way to Blessington to help out the Dublin IRA, who had come out that direction after the Battle of Dublin. They were on their way back now with the aim of rendezvousing with the anti-treaty forces in Waterford City. There was a famous photo taken of one of this group of anti-treaty taken on their packed lorry on the main street in Greignamana. Some of you may be familiar with it. Later that evening, they moved into Inistigue, where they stayed the night. Their presence in the village of Inistigue was described by one local man as such, quote, "We had a very anxious night here on Sunday, the 16th of July 1922. At 10 o'clock, from about 80 to 90 Republicans arrived in the village in motor lorries and an armoured car and some motor cars and took up positions opposite the Woodstock Estate office. They placed sentries all around the place and then tea was demanded, which they got. They were very civil and in no way offensive. They were fully armed and equipped as well. They left at 10 o'clock in the morning and caused no disturbance. But what would we have done if there was an opposing Free State force? Why, the village would have been wrecked." End quote. And that letter was from William Rogers, who was the estate agent at Woodstock, courtesy of the Woodstock Museum there. Now, on Tuesday the 18th of July 1922, Commandant Prowse, fresh from his marriage nuptials just a few days before, departed Kilkenny City accompanied by a large column of over 500 Free State soldiers and made their way south towards Waterford City. There must have been some sight. At around 1 p.m. they reached the village of Kilmacow, which is just a few kilometres from Waterford, people know it, where they had dinner and refreshments. While there, the large group of Free State soldiers received general absolution from the Reverend Father Thomas Green, who was the chaplain of the local De La Salle novitiate that used to be there in Kilmacow, lest anything should happen to them during the impending battle. Then at around 6 p.m. that evening, they reached the outskirts of Waterford City. Prout then divided his forces into three columns, one under his own command, another under the command of Captain Heaslip, and also another under the command of Captain Paddy Paul, who was a Waterford City native. As the anti-treaty forces had of course raised the only bridge that crossed the river shore there, the Free State Army could not access the city. Instead, they took the strategically advantageous positions in the hills which overlooked Waterford City from the north bank Kilkenny side of the river at Mount Misery, at Sally Park and at Ferrybank. Prowse himself was mostly in the middle of a castle-type dwelling that was located where the former Ardrey Hotel was more recently. People would know it. There was a castle there before it was knocked down in the 60s. From these locations, they began sniping and firing Thompson machine guns at the anti-treaty IRA positions along the quay and in the city. The battle raged in Waterford City for the next 3 days. On Thursday, from a position on Mount Misery that overlooked the train station, an 18-pound artillery gun was placed. Prowse gave the order to commence the shelling of the city. The missiles were fired over the river shore and began raining down on specifically targeted anti-treaty IRA positions, most notably the military barracks and Waterford Jail, which was on Ballybricken. In a strange coincidence, the first shell that was fired under Paddy Paul's command managed to overshoot its intended target of Ballybricken Jail and instead landed in his mother's garden. The story seems a bit far-fetched but appears to be true, as the shell was kept as a souvenir on his mantelpiece in later life. Under the cover of darkness on Wednesday night, Free State soldiers discreetly crossed by riverboats further downstream in the shore across from Little Island. They attacked the city from the eastern flank on Thursday and Friday, basically making their way in the back door of what is now the Tower Hotel and then attacking from the Reginald's Tower side of things, pushing the anti-treaty out. The anti-treaty forces eventually surrendered on Friday evening the 21st of July, but many made their escape in the direction of West Waterford. The river crossing was also reopened as the bridge was lowered. It was a victory for Prowse and his Free State soldiers. However, one of the Free State soldiers, 25-year-old Private Michael Costello, who was part of the Ferrybank column, died in the fighting, having been shot through the lung during the battle. Costello died on the 20th of July, the day after he was shot, and he died in a field hospital that had been set up in Ferrybank. His remains were transported to Kilkenny military barracks. Costello also taken part in the attack on the forecourts in June, literally just 3 weeks earlier. He was a farm labourer before joining the Free States Army and had 12 siblings. His funeral took place in his native Dundrum, County Tipperary, on Sunday, the 23rd of July. Now, during this period of the fighting, the fledgling Free State Army was obviously contemplating experimenting with modern technologies. An officer in GHQ, Captain McNamara, calculated the flight times between Kilkenny and the major garrisons in the south of the county. He also calculated the flying distance between Baldonnel Air Base in Dublin and Kilkenny City, which he calculated was about 55.367 miles. It's not recorded why these calculations were requested or what tactic they may have been used for, but it's interesting to surmise maybe they were for quick delivery of messages or transport of important people, maybe instead of getting attacked in ambushes and such. So technology was definitely coming on at this era. Now, at the end of July, just a week after all this battle in Waterford, the Free State Army in Kilkenny City was embroiled in a great deal of controversy following the death of an unarmed local man. In the early hours of Sunday the 30th of July 1922, a group of Free State soldiers were raiding houses in the vicinity of Black Mill Street, looking for arms and certain wanted individuals. Upon passing Dowling's public house at 1 a.m, they heard voices from inside. Dowling's was considered a centre for communication for the anti-Treacy IRA during the Civil War. The leader of the Free State raiding party, Lieutenant Peter Ratcliffe, knocked on the door and ordered it to be opened immediately. He also sent 3 soldiers to the rear of the building to cover any exit there. Maria Dowling, the owner of the pub, initially refused to open the door, but after a number of minutes, eventually relented. As the Free State soldiers entered the premises at the front, shots were heard firing from the rear. 2 Free State soldiers had opened fire on the men they saw running through the back garden. One of these men was found lying down in the drill of potatoes with a gaping head wound. He was 21-year-old Sam or Samuel Oakes, an employee of Smiddick's Brewery, who was living with his parents in nearby Waterbarrack. He was a brother of Bill Oakes, captain of the local anti-Treacy IRA company. He had been sent by his brother to the pub with 303 rifle ammunition. Sam was to rendezvous with 2 other anti-Treacy IRA men, Robert Kenny and James Morrissey. The latter were to convey the ammunition to Kilmaganny for onward delivery to the ASU operating in West Kilkenny and into Tipperary. The wounds Sam suffered were severe and he passed away in Dowling's kitchen a few minutes after being shot. His body was brought to St. Canice's Church in the city and he was later interred in Ballycallan. The inquest concerning his death was held the following day, with the jury brought to St. Canice's Church to view his remains before the funeral. The Free State officers in charge of the party on the night of the raid, Lieutenant Ratcliffe and Captain Leo Duffy, were unable, or most likely unwilling, to identify the 2 privates positioned at the rear of the building who fired the fatal shots. Undoubtedly, this was to protect them from any revenge attacks. They stated that the soldier who fired had done so with the intention of frightening the parties and not with the intention of killing them. That would be little use, of course, to the Oakes family. Now, having lost Waterford City, the anti-Treacy IRA now shifted their attention to maintain control of the town of Carrick-on-Shore, County Tipperary, of course. This was just over the Kilkenny border in the southwest of the county, close to the village of Piltown. From the Free State perspective, the town acted as a gateway to the Munster region, specifically the South Tipperary and North Cork region, and was therefore vital to overcome if they wanted to push west. The anti-Treacy IRA in Carrick-on-Shore were under the command of Brigadier Dinny Lacey, the person who had been involved in the Urlingford Barracks attack only 4 weeks earlier and the shootout near Mary Willie's pub. Dan Breen, quartermaster of the 3rd Tipperary Brigade, was also in charge of another party of nearly 100 anti-Treacy IRA in an area north of the town, close to the villages of Nilebine House and Winegap on the Kilkenny Tip border. He was there to impede any forces that would be coming that direction. The Free State forces, once again under the command of Prout, planned a 2-pronged attack. The troops based in Waterford City would sweep across South Kilkenny and attack the town from the east. Simultaneously, another party of Free State soldiers under the command of Commandant Thornton, Commandant Joseph Byrne and Commandant McCarthy would travel southwest from Kilkenny City. The latter's aim was to take control of the town of Callan, along with the villages of Mulnahone, Killamery, Nileman House and Winegap, where anti-treaty outposts and Dan Breen, of course, were located, before eventually arriving in Carrick-on-Shore from the northern flank. So just after midnight on Tuesday, the 1st of August, 1922, a detachment of approximately 200 Free State soldiers left Kilkenny City Barracks and travelled towards Callan. Now, they wouldn't have all been from Kilkenny. Many would have come down from Dublin and, of course, other parts of the country. The journey through the countryside was long and arduous as the roads were badly damaged, having been trenched in many places. So these are the anti-treaty in the local villages and stuff, helping out the cause by digging holes and that kind of thing. Engineers were required in a number of locations to fix the road and remove felled trees. Upon reaching the town of Callan after 4 a.m, it was discovered that the anti-treaty IRA had withdrew the previous evening in the direction of Carrick-on-Shore. However, it was not all good news for the Free State soldiers, as the main bridge in the town, which crossed the King's River, known locally as the Big Bridge, had been blown up by the retreating anti-treaty forces in order, of course, to stop the Free State troops getting an easy route. There was no ring road in those days, so you had to go over that bridge. The Free States had no alternative then but to wade across the river. The vehicles were also driven and pushed across the river, the low level of the river in the summer helping their cause greatly. They stopped in the Green Street area for the remainder of the day in order to consolidate their position and garrison the town. A number of Free State soldiers were to remain in the town permanently to make sure the anti-treaty wouldn't come back in. As the RIC and the military barracks had been destroyed some weeks previously, part of the workhouse complex actually acted as their temporary barracks. Now, the following morning, that's Wednesday, the 2nd of August, the majority of the Free State Party continued their journey on towards Carrick-on-Shore. At around 10 a.m, outside the village of Killamery, they had their first clash against a column of anti-treaty IRA men under Dan Breen's command. Under the shadow of that famed Slievenamon Mountain, a raging gun battle ensued, which lasted a number of hours. Eventually, the Free State forces took control of the village at approximately 2 p.m. All the anti-treaty IRA escaped over the hills towards Carrick-on-Shore. The Free State troops encountered sporadic fighting as they passed through the villages of Winegap and 9 Mile House and onwards to Carrick-on-Shore, with sniping being the main order of the day. Now, the eastern flank of the Free State attack, under the command of Prowse himself, also began their manoeuvres on Tuesday morning, the 1st of August. They travelled from Waterford and mustered in the village of Mullinvass, some 15 kilometres north of Waterford. They took this odd route to Carrick, as some bridges along the usual route through Munkine and Piltown had been destroyed or blocked. Prout's troops were joined by reinforcements in Mullinvass, which had come from Kilkenny City. At around 8 a.m, the convoy of 10 lorries and over 500 Free State soldiers departed Mullinvass, proceeding southwest across the Welsh Hills, through Templeorm and down into the village of Piltown. This village had been an outpost of the anti-treaty IRA based in Carrick, but when the Free State Army arrived, they were told by locals that the anti-treaty forces had evacuated the area earlier that day, having become aware of the movements of soldiers from Mullinvass. There had been upwards of 50 anti-treaty IRA in Piltown, many of them billeted in the servants' quarters of Besborough House, which is now Kildotton College, just outside the village. 5 sheep and 1 bullock from the domain were slaughtered to feed the hungry anti-treaty troops. The local GP, Dr. James Quirk, had his house commandeered by Dr. Kathleen Lynn, the famed doctor, the Republican and suffragette, who was a native of Mayo and who had fought in the 1916 Rising, as well as setting up the first children's hospital in Dublin in 1919. A newspaper journalist who wrote for the very pro-treaty Freeman's Journal was travelling with the advancing Free State Army and wrote that the people of Piltown gave them a glad smile and a cheery welcome. He quoted a local woman saying, "We are robbed and ruined," and that she had been saying Hail Marys that we might see their backs, that being the backs of the anti-treaty side. the indirect route over the hills to Piltown proved to be a wise move on the part of the Free State Forces, as the bridge over the River Pill on the main road from Waterford City had been blown up by the anti-treaty forces as well. Now, by the evening, the Free State Army were on the outskirts of Carrick-on-Shore. The attack on the town of Carrick by the Free State Army commenced, though, the following day at 8 a.m. in the morning. That's Wednesday, the 2nd of August. It began at Killonery on the Kilkenny side of the small Ligon River, about 3 kilometres east of the town, in an area known locally as Tree Bridges. The attack was focused around Tinvane House, which is still there, on the opposite side of the river, which was the main position being held by Brigadier Denny Lacey and about 100 anti-treaty IRA. The opposing forces both had machine guns. So the stillness of that lovely summer morning was broken with the deafening rat-a-tat-tat of the deadly weapons. Rifle fire was also initiated from both sides. The firing continued for many hours. At one stage, the anti-treaty IRA tried to outflank the Free State troops, but were driven back by gunfire. They had, however, come very close, as the Free State soldiers could hear them shouting, "Up Tip!" and "Up Cork!" as they attempted to throw grenades at each other. In the afternoon, 18-pound shells were fired by the Free State forces into the woods and fields surrounding Tinvane House, of course to intimidate the anti-treaty side. One of the anti-treaty IRA leaders, Bill Quirk, later praised his side's part in the battle, describing it as the best piece of line fighting during the Civil War campaign. That's a kind of a full-on assault as opposed to an ambush. He also commented on some of the events that day on the Piltown Tip border as such, quote, "Here we were under fire from an 18-pounder in addition to what appeared unlimited rifles and machine guns from the Free State Army side. The big gun was rather demoralising, but as an effective weapon it proved relatively harmless. At this stage, I found Mick Sheehan, who was another anti-treaty officer, calmly reading a novel. And when one of the big shells dropped in the same field near Tinvane House, he just turned the corner so he wouldn't lose the page and closed the book." End quote. And I suppose it sounds very calm and funny there, but when shells are exploding around you, the best thing to do is keep your head down, because it's the shrapnel that could injure you. So there's not much you can do when shells are exploding. Now, the heavy artillery fire did eventually have the desired effect, however, as the anti-treaty IRA secretly kind of pushed back towards the town later that evening and made a strategic retreat. It was not all good news for the Free State Army, however. One of its privates, who was 22-year-old Patrick Murphy from Enniscorthy, County Wexford, was killed in the assault. He died probably instantaneously, having been shot in the head. His comrade, Michael Ryan, carried Murphy on a stretcher to a nearby ambulance, but he had already passed away by the time they got there. Patrick Murphy had been hit standing beside his captain, Edward Balfe, who was also his neighbour and mentor from Shannon Hinn, Enniscorthy. Balfe was the former OC of the North Wexford IRA Brigade during the War of Independence, while he was also one of the escapees from Kilkenny Jail the previous November. You might have remembered him from that podcast. The following morning, now, the Free State Army, under Prout's command, made their way cautiously towards the town centre of Carrick-on-Shore. They were obstructed for a time about a kilometre outside the town, as the railway bridge that spanned the roadway, which was the main train line between Waterford and Limerick, had been blown up by the retreating IRA. Now, upon arriving on the main street in Carrick, they realised that all the anti-treaty IRA, both Lacey's eastern section and Breen's northern section, had evacuated the town during the night, travelling south towards the Cumber Mountains in Waterford and west in the direction of Clonmel. A famous photo of Commandant Prowse was taken by a newspaper as he stood outside the Corrig Hotel there on the main street in Carrick, which of course is still there today. Now, would you believe, amongst the nearly 200 anti-treaty members escaping from Carrick that night was Eamon de Valera, who had been billeting in the town with the anti-treaty group. Now, de Valera was just an ordinary IRA soldier throughout the Civil War, hence de Valera really played no part in the organising the overall military strategy of the anti-treaty forces. The military leaders on the anti-treaty side would have considered him a politician, not a soldier, so they wouldn't have taken much notice of him. However, IRA leader Bill Quirk said that De Valera was actually heavily involved in the military tactics at the fighting in Carrick-on-Shore and directed operations along the River Pill. So probably was the only real big battle he was involved with in the Civil War in terms of facing off against the Free States in such large numbers. De Valera, by the way, had actually passed down through County Kilkenny on his way to Tipperary. He had left Dublin. He had been up there during the fighting in Dublin, came down then through Wicklow and into Kilkenny and into Tipperary. He actually stayed in Paulstown for one night. The departing anti-treaty forces destroyed large parts of the two bridges in Carrick that crossed the River Shore to stop the Free State soldiers giving chase. This caused an additional headache for the local inhabitants who were sheltering in their homes, of course, as the main water supply into the town was also caught in the explosion of the new bridge, as it's called, in Carrick. During their stay in Carrick-on-Shore, the anti-treaty IRA were not made welcome by some of the locals, especially the former soldiers who had fought in the First World War. Now, the Free State troops that came from the Callan direction arrived in the late afternoon and linked up with Prowse and their comrades. Later that night, the Free State Army GHQ issued a statement from Dublin affirming its success in the area. Quote, "The government troops now occupy Carrick-on-Shore. An advance party entered the town at 2 p.m. today, that's Thursday, the 3rd of August. The irregulars, and that's what the Free State called the anti-treaty, in Carrick-on-Shore, estimated about 300, crossed the river and retreated hurriedly across the mountains. The town has not suffered any appreciable damage." End quote. Now, Prowse and his Free State Army, including many Kilkenny men, continued to push west and attacked the town of Clonmel in County Tipperary, which was captured a week after Carrick-on-Shore was captured. All in all, the previous weeks had worked out well for Prowse. He had cleared the anti-treaty forces from their strongholds in County Kilkenny, along with Waterford, Carrick-on-Shore, and then Clonmel in just a few weeks. He had also found time to get married on top of that. And just a note on Dinny Lacy, the anti-treaty commander we talked about in this podcast, he was actually killed in a battle in the Glenavaherlow the following year. And it was his nemesis, Prowse, who led the Free State column that killed him in February 1923. But to many living in August 1922, it looked that the Civil War would be short and sharp. Maybe the Civil War would be over in just a few weeks. However, the type of warfare was to change. And as we will discover in the next podcast, these big set-piece battles over towns gave way to the more familiar guerrilla warfare tactics over the weeks and months ahead. This would give the advantage to the anti-treaty side and, of course, prolong the conflict of brother versus brother and sister versus sister. Now, I think that is where we will leave it there today. Just to thank you all once again for listening. Until next time.